This is going to be the last segment for this year. Because of traveling on Thursdays, I won't be able to make the last two subjects. So we'll carry those over and we'll start this back up in sometime in January, probably around the middle of January, and take it from there. You'll have to excuse me every once in a while if I cough or something. I've got some type of allergy, so I'm getting a lot of drainage, but hopefully I'll be able to make it through this without any interruptions or inconvenience. But I apologize ahead of time if it does happen. Okay, we're looking at the transition game. Transition game is a very, very interesting area. You won't find it as much a factor in the club games as you will as you get into the varsity games. And even there, since we've gone from 30 meters to 25, it's made a difference in teams' ability to set up a really good counterattack. I mean, at 30 meters, if you had a really fast team, the chances of you getting somebody open in the transition was pretty good. But now that the teams are more of an equal level, it's a little harder to do. And usually in the transition game, it's one of these situations where I call it a want-to. I mean, obviously, the team that's going on offense wants to take advantage of the team on defense, and the team on defense wants to prevent that advantage. And they want to stop any type of advantage that the offensive team has. And as you get up to the higher levels, there are several ways that this can be done, which we'll get to a little bit later. But obviously, if you take a look at that first clip, this is a nice counterattack. You don't see these very often. And just click on number one and let it run through. And I'm going to start mine right now. The teams will go down on offense first. And then the ball's going to turn over. So as mine runs through, I'm going to take it back again and let it go. And I'm going to stop it at about 6.8 seconds. And you can see that the team that's in the white caps, they're on offense. And they're going to make a shot or make an effort to get the inside water and score a goal. And it doesn't work out. We could take a look at that situation and analyze it, but for the sake of brevity and moving on, I'm not going to do it. So let it run from there. Now, at 10 seconds, you can see an arrow, and it points to a particular player. And the reason why this counterattack was successful was because that player was pretty sharp, it was pretty alert. On the defense, you can see the white cap player to his right. He's starting to move off to the right for whatever particular reason. And this creates a nice little opening. So from 10.6 seconds, you can let it run through. And you can follow that guy. And you can see how he gets a jump. And obviously, the goalie is very good and makes a spot-on pass. And he has the opportunity to score a goal. So to see counterattacks like this, it's not really, really that common unless there's a big imbalance in both teams. But when you have teams of equal ability, it's tougher and tougher to find that man advantage. Okay, I also forgot to kind of go over a little bit of statement here as far as these clips are concerned. Just remember, some of these clips, there may be some controversial calls or no calls that appear in these clips, but the primary focus for us is to understand how these situations happen. And the referees need to be in position to see that full action and reaction. And we're trying to look at the techniques that are utilized while attempting to gain an advantage or prevent one. And any negative reflection on referees is not intended. And this is all for educational purposes. And a reminder that we all make mistakes. Mistakes are made. Even the best referees will make a mistake, will miss a call. But that's not going to be the end of the world. And when we take a look at them on video like this, it should be an educational effort or opportunity so that they can improve their game. And by being aware of the different techniques and what's happening, it'll make you more aware. The more video you can review, the more you can take a look at it in detail, the better off you're going to be when you get on that big game and you have to take front stage. So with that said, let's go to number two. Now, this is one way that a team can try to prevent a team from going on a good counterattack. And run it through. I just started mine. Okay, now I'm going to go back and start it again, and I'm going to stop it right where the arrow is and right where the shot is being taken, which is about 1.56 seconds. Now, at this particular point in time, there are two ways a counterattack can come off of this situation. One, it could come off by the shooter, the defensive player on the shooter, anticipating that shot and just taking off. And if he does, he'll get the advantage, and that will be where the basis for that counterattack can take place. Number two, you have to be very alert when you see a shooter taking a shot on the goal. You can't get so involved in that ball, in the goalie blocking it, et cetera, that you don't take a look at what just happened as the shooter takes the shot. Now, this wouldn't be the front court or the attack referee's responsibility. This would be more for the perimeter referee at this particular point in time. You see that shot coming, and you kind of scan across the perimeter of the pool, and you see how the players are all set up and try to get a feel for what's going to happen from there. In this particular situation, if you just place your cursor on that white circle and just kind of move it forward, you can see the shot. And it's really interesting. I'm at 2.26 seconds. If you look at all the players in the pool, what are they doing? They're looking back to see what happened to that shot, to see if the goalie blocked it, or if it went in and was a goal. Everybody has their head turned that way. But now as you move it a little bit further, you'll see the white team start to turn their heads, and they'll start to get ready to go on a counter. Now, if the shooter delays the slightest bit, he's going to be a problem. He's going to be in trouble. It's going to be a problem. But you look to see what that shooter does. He reaches out, extends his arm out, and he's going to block the white gap from making a good counter attack. And obviously, this would be an exclusion foul, and it was caught. So just let that run through. You can see the action. Of course, the player tries to say, hey, I'm not fouling. I have both hands up in the air. But having both hands up in the air and reaching out is one thing. Having both hands vertically up in the air is something totally different. And if you put your hands up in the air and they're vertical and they're straight, there's no way you're going to be impeding or holding or fouling that player that's going on the counterattack. So long as you stay within shoulder width and you get two hands up in the air, that's good. But as soon as you reach out, even though you're showing two hands, that's basically holding that person from getting on a counterattack. So the ball turns over. And that was a good call. All right, let's go to number three. Now, those of you that were on a previous night, we had this clip. We showed it for a different purpose. But this is how a counterattack, this will show how a counterattack can get going with an advantage. Is it legal or is it illegal? Now, because of that open player going down the middle of the field of play is in a big advantage situation. The defense has to acknowledge that person. And if you come from the outside back and cover in the middle, you leave that outside player open, that's better percentage for the goalie to take the outside person as opposed to that ball coming back into the middle. So the reason why that one player got the advantage, let's take it all the way back to the beginning and let's just run it through a little bit. Okay, I'm at 3.43 seconds. You can see where the player is going up for a steal to intercept that pass. As we spoke about previously, that obviously was an offensive foul because she sunk that person. But at this particular point, we're not worried about that. You're looking at the player that is just to her left, her own teammate, and watch what she does. And you can just move this through here slowly. She's basically holding two players. If you're at 5.33 seconds, you can see where her right hand has a hold of the white cap player in front of her, and her left hand is going to hold the white player that's to her left. And that's going to give the girl that intercepted the pass the opportunity to get quite an advantage. And that's where this whole counterattack gets set up. Now, as you move this through slowly, you can see how that white player that was to her left kind of stops right in the water. And this is about 8.2 seconds on the screen. Then she puts her hands up in the air and says, oh, wait a minute, I'm not fouling. There's no foul here. And obviously there was, and the referee didn't see it. Now, can we expect the referee to see that? I think we can. It would be tough for the attack referee because the attack referee was following that ball in. But right after that ball goes in and the steal happens, that's when you have to be extremely vigilant as to what's going on with the other players in the pool. So I think that could have been picked up. I think that's something that they just missed. Okay, I'm letting mine just kind of finish up here a little bit. And that's quite a swing for a team. Okay, let's go to number four. Now, the other thing that you have to be concerned with, and you'll see it on this tape, is what happens later in the transition. When somebody gets a jump, one of the referees, and you have to collaborate yourselves, and in this particular case, that perimeter referee should now be moving down with the lead players and following the action. And let it run through. I'm starting mine right now. Okay, mine went completely through. So let's go back to the beginning. And I'm going to put this right about when the shot took place, or excuse me, when the pass took place into the center forward. And we're right about 3.3 seconds. You can see how she gets a big jump on that player. That player didn't respond very quickly, didn't react very quickly. She was more concerned about what happened to the ball when it went in the center forward. So she gets a nice jump. So now we go down. Now we go down to where it gets interesting, 9.87 seconds. And you can see the white cap with the ball, and she actually gets her hand on the ball, and she has a trail defender, but the goalie's all of a sudden decided that she's going to come out and try to see if she can, you know, break this up. Obviously, it's a tough situation for the dark team. Okay, as you run that through a little bit, you see the trail. She gets two hands up in the air. She does a pretty good job of not really sinking or holding. And the goalie comes in, and the goalie actually is the one that makes real contact. And what I would talk with the referee about that's on that side that made that ordinary foul, I'd say, well, it was the hand on the ball, and then you just called an impeding foul. If the hand was off the ball, you know, there might be an exclusion here for the goalie. As a possibility. So the ball drifts away. Now the other player coming down, she has no clue and just swims through the ball. So that's interfering with a free throw. And that's was the call. Now, there's a little bit of confusion here because if you are at 16.75, you can see that one player starts to go out, and then a second player starts to go out. So you have two players going out of the field of play. Now, they haven't left the field of play. If, according to the rules, two players leave the field of play, you immediately stop play and pull the ball out. Well, the fact that they're on their way over to the exclusion area, the game doesn't have to be stopped at this particular point in time. But as soon as if both of those players went out, then you'd have to stop the game and you have to pull the ball out. And if a goal was scored, it counts before you pull that ball out, before you asked for the ball to come out. If a goal had been scored, then you hadn't taken away the advantage of the offense and that goal counts. This can be kind of a controversial situation. Some of you may have run into this before. But basically, it's really unfair to the offensive team. If you see two players leaving the field of play, it's their responsibility. If you made clear signals as to who was excluded, then it's the player's responsibility to understand that and know that they have to go to the exclusion area. So there's a time element here where if the team on offense can take advantage of this situation and score a goal, that goal is going to count. But if you see both players leaving the field of play, that's when you've got to take and stop the game. So there's maybe 2 seconds, maybe 3 seconds at the most, but you never should let 7 or 8 or 9 seconds go by before you stop playing, pull that ball out and correct the situation. That's more than enough time for the offensive team to take advantage of the situation. Okay, let's move to number 5. Now, you're going to have to pay very close attention on this one. Before you run it through, just kind of scan out over the field of play. Notice where the ball is. Notice where they're trying to set up the center forward, where the center forward defensive player is. Just kind of scan around, try to get a good picture. And now run it through. Started. I just started mine. Okay, mine ran all the way through. Now we're back at the beginning. And what I want you to do this time, run it through in slow motion. You can click on that 1/1, it'll turn to 1/2. If you click on it again, it'll turn to quarter speed. So put it on quarter speed. And now run it through and keep your eyes on the players that are closest to you and see how this all gets started. All right, I just started mine. Okay, the shot goes in the goal. Okay, I'm going to stop it. It's 6 seconds. Now I'm going to bring it back. I'm going to bring it back. Okay, watch what happens. I'll bring it forward and I'll really do it frame by frame. Watch that white cap. That white cap takes his right arm, extends it out, and wraps it right around the blue cap. And he basically gets him a little bit in a stranglehold and brings him, pulls him all the way over on top of him. That's how this whole thing got started. Now, who gets ejected in this? The blue cap gets ejected because later on down, if you let this run at regular speed, again, go back to 1-1, just press on it and let it go from here. One, he could be excluded right there early, but the referee waits and excludes him the second time, which was a good exclusion at that particular point. But if you'll notice, that player, as he gets excluded, he throws his hands up in the air and kind of goes, what? And for good reason, because he got knocked right at the very beginning when that ball turned over. And this is what you have to be aware of. Things like this can happen. Okay. And if you have any questions on any of these, you can email me or you can text me at 205-233-1826 or edswimpolo@charter.net. All right, let's go to number 6. Okay, run it through. I just started mine. Okay, basically I'm at the end, so I'm going to bring it back to the beginning, and I'm going to let it run through a little bit until I see the yellow circle. And there you see the yellow circle. Now you can watch a little bit more closely what transpires at the center forward and the center forward deep position. One of the first things that I would look at in this particular situation, there's always an instigator, even though you might call it double exclusion, there has to be somebody that started it. If you can find the person that started it, obviously you want to exclude them first, number one. And in this particular situation, the blue cap goes underwater. Basically, he basically goes and turns into the white cap. And he will then, if you move it forward just a little bit from about 10.27, he goes underwater. And he's underwater, and basically he's holding that white cap. Of course, how that white cap responds is significant. If that white cap got ticked off and gave an elbow, gave a punch, gave a knee or whatever, then obviously that's a player safety issue. And the blue cap comes up and is kind of looking as though he's injured. So in this situation, the referee called a double exclusion. But if that was a clean situation, 90% of the time, a player that goes underwater is up to no good. I'd say that's a good 90% of the time. So you always want to be very suspicious of that. And, of course, going underwater is a very dangerous situation. A lot can happen. Kicking, knees, even a hand to the face, a punch or whatever. And you've got to be ready for that. Okay, let's move on to number 7. And you can see the circle right at the beginning. I haven't started mine yet. And you have to kind of look a little bit close or carefully on this. But there's definitely a kick. And this is one thing that, you know, teams, players can do to try to gain an advantage. It's a player safety issue. If it's a violent kick, misconduct, flagrant misconduct, you can roll them out of the game if you want to control the level of physicality and you see an intentional kick. Don't be afraid to call a misconduct and roll the player. That's a lesson that they learn the hard way. Okay, let it run through. Now, there could be a little bit of embellishment there by the dark cap, but it's, you can see the action and reaction. You can see the whole body kind of move back, so you know it's a kick. And remember, a camera angle, you can see an awful lot, but from the referee's position, sometimes players may be screened, and their view may be a little bit different. It may be a little more difficult for them to see something that's underwater. So you can't get on top of them and expect them that they can see every single thing. But by looking at this camera angle and discussing it with this particular referee, you know, there's no problem. But this kick was, the attack referee actually saw this kick, so it worked out just fine, and it was a good call. Okay, let's go on to number 8. Moving right along. All right, before you start the film, just kind of scan across, kind of get your bearings, and then follow the action. Okay, I stopped mine at 10.04, and I'm going to run it right back to the beginning. And hopefully most of you either get all the way through it or you get at least to that particular point in time. Now you know where the focus of attention is going to be. It's not going to be where the ball is, but it's going to be over here in the P1 or the P2 spot. And this is where the perimeter referee can take some responsibility for watching, although in this particular situation, a collaboration between the two referees should be at such that the attack referee should probably be taking the three players that are closest to her and the perimeter referee taking the three players that's closest to her or him. If they have voice-activated headsets, this is a simple task. If you don't have voice-activated headsets, it's a much more difficult situation, and it's a little bit harder for the two referees to coordinate themselves. But if you talk ahead of time before the game and in different situations, you try to talk to each other about when, you know, when can I step in or when can I step out? And when can you cover such and such and such and such? You might be able to collaborate a little bit better and get pool coverage down. But it's not an easy task. I understand that, especially after watching tons and tons of video. Okay, so now you're looking where the arrow is, and that's right at 4.73. And so as soon as that ball gets shot, you can see that both those players in that P1 position are aware that the shot was taken, and you look and see what the dark cap does. The dark cap goes right around and is going to move in front and try to hold off that defensive player that is now going to offense. And then it happens again. You have a little bit of contact here. That first part didn't get called. But if you go to right around 10 seconds, the fact that she grabs a hold there and gets a little bit of jump on the dark cap, that gets called. So it's like one incident happens, doesn't get called. Second incident happens, does get called. And there are two different types of calls. So you want to try to catch the first one before you have to go to the second one. All right, let's go to number 9. Now we're getting to the middle part of the transition. And this is going to happen about halfway down the pool. And in this particular clip, you're going to see two very similar situations. And what I want to do is kind of discuss the difference between the two. At the top of the screen, you're going to get a call. It's going to be an exclusion call in transition. At the bottom of the screen, you'll see a very similar action, which doesn't get called at all. So, run it through. I started mine. You saw the circle. Okay, mine went all the way through. Now I'm going to go back to where that circle was. And I'm going to run it by a little bit more. So you know the two players involved. And that white cap is going to duck under. Now, what is duck under? Duck under is an ordinary foul. It's impeding. Ducking under. It can happen at center forward. It can happen in transition, such as it does here. It's very, very difficult to get in front of a player without having at least a head and shoulders lead on that player and being a much stronger swimmer. So usually what would happen, and I don't see this happening as much now as I've seen it in the past, but I've seen that as almost an automatic exclusion foul for the player ducking under. And that's not right. That's not according to the rules as they are written. So you can slip under the arm without ducking under. And if you look in the foreground here, if you started at 6.40 and you follow those two swimmers, you watch right about at 9.67, she kind of slips under her stroking arm. And that's fine. That's perfectly legal. She had a little bit of an advantage. She slips around in front. That's okay. Now, what's not okay is the fact that she is trying to simulate a foul. At 10.24 seconds, you see a very clear shot of her butt sticking up in the air. Now, did she have to stick her butt up in the air? No, not at all. She should have just kept swimming and maintained that advantage, and that would have been fine. The defense puts two hands up in the air. I'm not fouling. Okay, she has her advantage, and she takes it all the way down. That's good. That's fair. But she slips under cleanly and sticks her butt up in the air. She's simulating. She's trying to draw that foul. She's trying to get the referee to call that exclusion foul. So that would be a good example of simulation in this situation right here. If you have any questions on that, just let me know. But the bottom one, nothing ever got called because of the exclusion foul at the top of the screen. And basically, if you run that back and you take a closer look at it, you can see that it's clear ducking under. She had to go completely underwater to get up in front of that player, and that is a foul. All right, number 10. All right, P1, lower left, backcourt, on turnover. Offensive foul was called here. See if you agree with this call. In fact, this might be, I might have, okay. We already took a look at this. I'm sorry, this is a duplicate. And if you caught the action at the first part, it should not be an offensive, but an exclusion foul. Later on, it becomes an offensive foul. And we covered that one pretty well. So go to number 11. And number 11 is a duplicate, I believe. Yes, we just talked about number 11, so let's go to number 12. Okay, and before you start it, this happened at the NCAA Championships in a semifinal game. And unfortunate situation. It got called as a misconduct originally, and you'll see the referee signal a misconduct. But then he changed it to a flagrant misconduct after he saw the other player surface. Of course, immediately the coach from the team decided that he was going to walk all the way around the pool deck and protest. But you can't really protest this. It's not protestable. And he never should have been allowed to come around and go over to the desk and protest at that particular point in time. I would hope in this situation that afterwards the coach would talk to the player that was involved, because you'll see now if you run it through. And I just started mine. That this was no questionably a flagrant misconduct and totally uncalled for. Of course, they're running a timeout play here, and that's a difficult thing for you all to follow sometimes. Now, the arrow's going to come in. Pretty soon. Yeah, I was going to come in there. Okay. At 36 seconds, you see the arrow coming in. And when it first comes in, it points right to the white cap there at 35.86. It's pointing directly at a white cap. Watch with this, follow this guy and let it run through. Now, obviously, a player was injured. He got punched in the face. And I was there at this particular game and saw this whole thing happening. And I was pretty much amazed. The referee on the far side realized the gravity of the situation and tried to call for the ball and get the ball out so they could stop the game. And that's when basically the referee on the near side changed it from a misconduct to a flagrant misconduct. And then after that, the game had to wait for so many minutes. That was 5 or 10 minutes before. I said it was a good 5 minutes before they got that game going back again, because the coach was over there trying to argue that you can't change a call from misconduct to flagrant misconduct. And play had been stopped. The referee on the other side was trying to stop the game, and a call can be changed in that time without any problem. Unfortunately for the player that was the puncher, so to speak, or target, I like to call that targeting, that particular player was a senior, and he had to sit out and miss the championship game, which I think was appropriate. Fortunately, that's a rare situation. We don't have that happening all the time. But when you get in real physical games and players get frustrated, you have to be ever so vigilant and stay on top of things and make sure that you keep that level of physicality down to a minimum. And usually players, you know, once you start excluding them and send the proper message, they will respond accordingly. Okay, number 13. Okay, this is on the lead counter, and this is basically just a pullback. But again, this is a situation that can happen. Of course, you can hear the fans in the foreground. That's an offensive. That's an offensive. Good call, referee. And the referees definitely get that right. Okay, mine ran all the way through, and I'll just bring that back. And if you run it through in slow-mo, you can see the lead and the transition. You can see that white cap gets a hold of his suit or gets a hold of part of probably his suit. And might have even got his arm and just darts out ahead and gets a clear lead. And that was a good catch by the perimeter referee that's now going down to be the attack referee. Now, I have to apologize because there is one clip that I did not include in tonight's presentation, and that is what they call quote-unquote jailbreak. And that's where a player will go to the center forward and will either face him. Most of the time they'll just face him and they just kind of hold him there while the center forward D on the other side is getting up above the water and starting to move on a counterattack. And the person that's doing the targeting on the jailbreak will basically hold that center forward for a couple of seconds and then take off. Now, that's getting into the area of a pick and how you establish a pick and how you shouldn't establish a pick. And you can't use your hands or your arms to hold a player. So that is a definite illegal. It should be an offensive foul, and the ball should be turned over. I apologize for not putting that clip on, but I'll bring it up at another session and show you an example of that. That's happening less and less now because the officials are calling that. And again, on the club situation, whether or not you'll see that, it depends upon how sophisticated the teams are. Most club teams just have a hard enough time getting a pattern on a counterattack, let alone trying to get sophisticated enough to set up a jailbreak. The same thing would apply if they're swimming down the pool and you had one player that decided to target somebody else's player that they were defending as they're going down. An offensive player comes over and tries to target that player and slow him down. If they come in and do any holding or anything illegal, that's got to be called. And that's something you can need to be aware of. All right, number 14. And this one, again, it's they didn't see the original action by the defender. The defender that was going on offense, I believe. So, but number 14, I'm just starting to play mine through. Okay, it was a very short clip, so we're back at the beginning. Just kind of move it through slowly. You can see it's in the, well, about the P3 area, but it's the second player up on offense. Dock caps are on offense. And you can see right here, if you are at 2.3 seconds, you can see that that dark cap, even if you move it a little bit earlier, she's got her arm extended out and is basically holding on to, right at 1.46, she's basically holding on to the shoulder of the white cap. And she's going to use that leverage to try to slow that player down. And as that white player starts to go away, I mean, she's kind of, it's like almost a hand check. You got 2.7, 2.8, 2.9. And she not only keeps that hand on that player, but she also moves towards that player and then goes underwater. And basically, she's the one, the dark cap is the one that's doing the damage. And she probably got a piece of the suit because you can see at 5.40, you can see the tan line being exposed. So she probably had her hand out there, grabbed a hold of the suit, and moved herself over to try to get underneath that white cap player. But the white cap player gets called for an offensive foul. And if you look behind her, at where the center forward position is, you can see a white cap player in her transition, see what happens to her. They start at 1.70 and take a look at center forward and center forward B. You can see the white cap player starting to go. And she starts to turn on her back as she goes, but the dark cap comes up underneath and basically gets it so that she's on the bottom and the white cap is on the top. So that happened about at the same time. But again, that's the dark cap making the initial contact. In that particular situation by moving over and into that player. Okay, number 15, last one. Okay, go ahead and run. Okay, I started mine. It's running through. Now, this is going to happen right at the edge of the camera on the left. Oh. So both those players get kicked out, the player that took the shot and the defender. Now go back and take a closer look at it. You started at the beginning. I started mine at the beginning, and I'm going to stop it right at 5.53. Just as the ball is being released for the shot on goal. Now, if you take that very slowly forward, watch what happens. That dark calf goes right on top and puts a little bit of a stranglehold on that player and continues his forward momentum. And he is wrapped around him and basically pulls him underwater. Now, to me, when I take a look at this, I'm going, hey, who's the instigator in this? Well, he has no business in the first place of being on that player's back, except that he was holding the ball. So he's holding the ball, and that player is gaining on him, but then he lets go of the ball. As soon as he lets go of that ball, that player's first responsibility is to get off his back, get off that player, regardless of where that ball went. But he doesn't. So he goes around, gets a strangle, and sinks that guy underwater. Now what happens underwater, who knows? But to me, that should have been a single exclusion, and it should have been the dark cap. So there we are. We can kind of wrap this up. Those are your stages. You've got the initial stage of the counterattack. A lot of stuff can happen there. You have to be very aware. The middle stage, not so much is going to happen. And you can basically follow all the players. You may have somebody that's trying to duck under or somebody that gets in front of a defensive player. And if the defensive player doesn't respond appropriately and get his hands up and roll off, obviously you can give an exclusion foul in that situation. But you don't want to give an exclusion foul if the other player ducked under to get positioning. And then, of course, in the final stages, you might be involved with, okay, are the players going inside now? You may have a one and nobody. You may have a one with a trail. You may have a two-on-one type situation. You let things get in. If you can, you can let things get into five-meter area. And once it gets into the five-meter area, then, hey, if it's a foul, any foul, that's a probable goal, it's going to be a penalty foul. So you've done a great job. You've been patient, and you let it get inside the five. You see the foul, you call it, boom, there it is. And penalty fouls is a subject that we will cover in one of our next sessions along with unusual situations. So thank you very much. Appreciate your time tonight. I hope it was a benefit. And again, if you have feedback, please feel free. And if you have any questions, please feel free. And I will open it up now if anybody wants to stay on for